So I wanted to talk a little bit about the person who did a lot of work in social emotional development in children. Okay, so let me introduce you. I'm sure many of you have heard of him. Erik Erikson. Anybody familiar with Erik Erikson's work in social emotional development? Okay, so. No, it's fine. I was late, so I can't say anything. He wrote Childhood and Society, if anybody heard, in the 1950s. He spent most of his time studying. First of all, let me tell you a little bit about who he was. He was an artist and a teacher, and later in life became a psychoanalyst, a child psychoanalyst. So he did a lot of studying about social emotional development in children and how that is the foundation of in early childhood education. And that social-emotional piece, by the way, we carry with ourselves forever. Now, it doesn't mean it can't be changed and altered, but the basis is in early childhood education, the first few years of life. I know that's hard to believe, but that's the research, and we continue to find that that's true in the research. So his theory, he had theory of eight ages of man. We're going to focus on just the early childhood piece because that's why we're here. So there are three stages that he talks about. Zero to one. I don't like to say zero. Let's talk about birth to one. You know, people talk about zero to three these days about a age group. It's birth to one, we'll say, and two to three, and then four to five. And if any of you have children, I'm sorry.
Between one and two.
What did I say? Zero to one, two and three? Oh, I see. Yes. So, let's talk about that. And then I said four and five, right? Okay. So, the truth is that the one to two is sort of combined. But we'll talk a little bit more about that. Good question. Well, this is the way he divided it, you know. But we'll talk about what all that is in a minute. So, again, he said that the patterns emerge in the earliest years of life and they regulate the rest of your life, which is phenomenal when you think about it. It's now, this is what we're doing. So the first stage from birth to one is a time for baby to develop a sense of trust. So does anybody think about what that means? Trust? Two trusts. Trust in the person that is most connected to the child. And the other one, trusting oneself. And that begins at a very young age. And the way children really begin to trust themselves is when they receive that trust. So if we're giving, they're getting. If we don't give that relationship, they can't go and they can't move. So the first year to develop trust will assist the following years in gaining independence. The formation of trust is called attachment. The first year is a critical time for that attachment to happen. There's a sense of security when a child is being taken care of by an adult. And also it's the foundation for the next stage. So when I build trust, then I can become independent. If I don't have the trust, I can't really be independent. Now, we've often heard, we've heard people say he's too attached to she's too attached to our mother, she's too attached to our father, she's too attached to the caregiver, whatever it is that this child is attached to, I always say, that's the good news. That's the good news. That's the good news. Why is that the good news? Even there's no such thing as too attached, whatever that may mean. You're attached. It's the good news because for the rest of your life you'll feel that security. So says Erikson, but so do a lot of other people. A lot of the research is about that. I think it's time to stand up. The room is getting larger now. Okay, so when we think about attachments, what are the attachments the first year? What happens? How do we attach? Come on, help me.
The baby cries, you go.
Okay, the baby cries, you go. You hold the baby, right.
Feed
the baby by holding the baby, not propping the bottle. Yes, holding that attachment, whether you're breastfeeding or whether you hold a bottle feeding, hold the baby. Yes, hold that baby. That's the attachment, the physical attachment. And Erikson says that physical attachment is the same nourishment we think we give the baby formula. That's the physical, we're feeding the baby, and the holding and the physical is the emotional attachment. So that holding is critical. The responding right away, not letting a baby cry too long, the frustration, that's the trust. That's when we're going to give that trust. That's how we're going to develop the trust in the first year. Okay, so let's talk about the twos and threes. Anybody have twos and threes here? Great age, right? What's wonderful about that age?
Nice.
Say it. What did you just say?
Nice.
They're what?
Nice.
They're nice? Okay. More.
They're funny.
They're fearless.
Fearless?
And they're willing to take risks. They're curious. They're not afraid to try new things.
Okay. What else?
They're blossoming. They're starting to talk. They're
okay. What else? No negatives?
Mine.
Twos?
Mine.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
what?
Mine. It's mine.
Mine. Oh, oh, yes. Yes. Mine. Everything is mine. What else? No negatives of twos? Nobody had tantrums?
No patience.
Sense of self, they say no.
Yeah.
No, I don't want.
No, I don't want. Right, right. What else? Twos? No? They're all wonderful?
Yeah.
Yeah? Really? Really? I had a few of them myself. Nobody screams, I don't want to do this. I'm not going out. No? I'm not cleaning up. I'm not doing... No, 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 no. No? Nobody has that experience with twos
and threes?
With
my kids? Twos and threes? Yeah.
Good, I'm glad.
Right?
All right, so that's the tension. That's the tension of twos and threes, especially twos, but oh, even threes, okay? That's the tension. What's the tension? I want to be a baby. I want that closeness, and I want to be independent. That conflict is there all the time, all the time, all the time. It's constant as they grow. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, what do you do that helps?
When I say no, just try to make it fun.
Try to make it fun. Okay. Okay, those are good ideas. Yes, absolutely. Now, Erickson says that we need to stay calm and understand that there's a conflict in those twos and threes, that they live with conflict, and we need to respond to those conflicts, not to get upset that there's that conflict, but to know that there is that conflict. I want to be a baby. I want to be a big person. I'm not sure yet. I'm swaying. Maybe I'm still 1.5. Maybe I'm really not 2. Maybe I'm not really 3. Maybe I'm really 2.5. And that goes on all the time, that dance. And we need to be sensitive to that dance. So emotionally, the social and emotional piece that they're going through is really a conflict. They're in constant conflict. They're not sure where they are yet. Even though, yes, they're very big, they want to be big, they want to do everything themselves. On the other hand, they take risks that are not safe. So in the same time that they're big, they're also little. And that we need to address. And the way we need to think about that is giving children choices. So let's talk about choices. You know the choice, do you want to get dressed? Is that a choice? That is not a choice. So let's not ask the question. Right? Once you ask the question, then it's a choice. Then I have a choice of saying yes or no. If I'm going to say no, and you're going to say but you have to, then what? Well, then we're getting into a struggle. It's going to be one of these wonderful power struggles. And who wins in a power struggle? Nobody wins in a power struggle. Even if you get them to do what you want to do, you didn't win that one. You may be controlling them, and you may be able to take a 2-year-old and just say, we're out of here, pick them up and get out. But the social, emotional piece, you didn't help. You didn't help that child feel competent. You didn't help that child feel, I can do this. Really what you did, you helped the child feel, you know what, I really have no control. Because once the adult takes control, when there's no discussion about it. So let's take that same scenario. You need the child to get dressed. What's the choice?
What do they want to wear?
Not what do you want to wear.
What about this shirt? Blue shirt, yeah. I mean, okay. These jeans.
These pants or these pants? This shirt or that shirt? Now, that 2-year-old, I'm not going. Yes. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I don't want to go. Stuck? Stuck? Is anybody stuck?
Wow. I don't know what I say is what's right, but I'll tell you what I say.
What works?
Like,
forget
you
you're right or wrong.
You want to stay home by yourself or you want to come with me? And then you go out with
those choices? Is that a choice? And would you really leave him alone?
Would I? No, but I get the housekeeper.
Okay, so then that's a choice. Then that is a choice. That's a fair choice.
Not a choice everybody has.
You're right, and that's why I say that, because if you're really not going to leave the child there, that's not a choice. You're lying. And children know that, and again, that doesn't make a child feel competent nor emotionally secure and safe. So, again, choices need to be real choices for children, not false choices. We need to also set...
Going back to that red shirt, blue shirt, and he says,
no. No, nothing, right?
So then what?
Yeah.
Okay. We have to give him, yes.
I give him incentive.
Like
if you don't get dressed, you're not gonna be able to have this. You know, it's incentive. If they want cereal and bag to go to school, they need to get dressed. If they don't get dressed, they're not gonna get the cereal. Mm-hmm. They're gonna get dressed in the end anyway, because they're gonna want that cereal.
Mm-hmm. What about do you want me to get you dressed, or do you want to do it yourself?
Yeah.
There are two options.
Yeah, those are two options. Because that correlates. I want you to hold on to that comment, which we will get to in a few minutes, about rewards and punishments. I do want to talk about that. It's a really important piece about social and emotional understanding, certainly of children, and what they understand. So let's hold on to that, because I want to touch on that. And also setting clear and consistent, reasonable limits. You know what reasonable means?
For them to understand, right?
Yeah. You know, we sometimes set some rules up arbitrarily, and kids have no clue what we're talking about. It has to be something they understand. Again, we're talking about a child's emotional life. If a child walks around not understanding what's going on in their life,
it's frustrating.
And to think about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, have you been in classrooms where you don't understand, or in school where you have no clue what the teacher's talking about? How do you feel? Dumb. Mm-hmm. You feel stupid. Yeah. And that some children walk around feeling that way because they don't understand what adults want from them. It isn't clear. It's not what they need to do. Okay. So the other piece is that we need to accept, which I said, children swings between independent, and dependent. You know, I've heard parents say things like, what? You want me to carry you? You're 2.5 years old. You're walking already. What do you mean? Go back to what that 2.5-year-old is. Yes, sometimes 2.5-year-olds need to be held. Doesn't mean they need to be held for the whole time. But for some moment, they do need to be held if that's what they need to do. Because they're back in that dependent.
And what if they're 4 and they're saying that?
I guess they need it.
Our strategies primarily talk about the impact of their actions on others. So if they're taking a while to get ready for school, say, if you're late for school, the other children would be sad because you're not there. Because they think the child takes a while to learn about how the rest of the world operates.
Yeah, but you know, I worry about that. You know why? I worry about guilt.
They're Jewish.
That comes naturally. You don't have to put it on there. I worry about guilt. They need to get dressed not because of the other children. They need to get dressed because it's now 9 o'clock or 8:45, and they have to be in school, and that's why they need to. That's the genuine piece, folks. We need to be genuine with children. It's not about 14 other reasons that they need to get there. It's about, right now, that's what we do every morning at 8:30. We leave this house. You need to be dressed by 8:25 so you can be in that car at 8:30. That's the message. That's the clear message. It's not about anybody else. It's about ourselves, and this is what we do in this house, and these are the rules and regulations. I mean, I couldn't give that structure for that lecture, but I would say it's 8:25 every day. 8:25. That's what we do. We go to school.
That's like what I'm trying to look at. Okay, I give the choices. I can wear the red shirt. I can wear the blue shirt. You get dressed by himself. Forget how. Blah, blah. But it's still, you know, now's when you have to get dressed, and you have to get dressed because it's time to get dressed. And how do you kind of get
so listen, when we're thinking about the social and emotional piece, we can't lose the fact that they are young and time is not yet in their system, and we need to be sensitive to that. That doesn't mean that every household is not ridiculous around 8:30 when you gotta get out. And there are three kids running around and this one didn't get that. Okay, that's part of a family and children learn to live part of that. And that's normal and that's fine. But we need to constantly be reminded that these years are the most important years in terms of social emotional development. They will take these experiences for the rest of their lives. That's how serious this is. Now, if we take that seriously, then we can concentrate on what it is we need our children to do. You know, once you're aware, your language changes. Once you're aware, your attitude changes. And once your attitude changes, your household will change. We can't, if you know that it takes the kids so long to get out of the house in the morning, I mean, I hate to be that that's the only issue. There are other issues in life besides getting out in the morning, but I know, for young parents, it's probably the worst. Then give yourself more time. Then think of some way that you can have that discussion with the family, maybe. But that rushing, that hysteria in the morning, keep thinking that those years are the most critical in terms of social emotional. You keep that in your mind. I'm telling you that your way, you'll find a way to get there. Okay, so let's go on. So the most important thing is that children need to be able to experience the fury and demands of this unpredictable stage in their development, and it is difficult, without losing the support and reassurance of the important adults in their lives. That's the most important thing. We need to support children, not think that they're being bad, not think that they're doing things on purpose to hurt us. That's not the way children behave, and that's not the way children think. It's not about them doing to us. It's about who they are and what they're doing in their own development. And in order to secure that social emotional strength in children, we need to be supportive. That's our role. So, yeah.
So what do you do in the morning if everything went well?
Here's the go the morning.
Dressed and they're ready to go, and as soon as the carpool gets there, I don't want to go, I want you to take me.
Okay, so that's a whole other thing that maybe we should do this exercise now. We're going to do an exercise. You've been sitting and listening to me yak, and this is a good question. I think we're going to do an exercise. Take a partner. One of you, let me tell you what it is. It's perhaps better if you do it not with your spouse, but it doesn't matter. Do it whatever you want to. Here's what we're going to do. Partner A will do the following. Partner A is going to tell partner B a problem that they have. Now, when you tell that problem to B, B is not going to talk. B is only going to listen. And B is, this is going to be a 3-minute exercise. So A is going to tell a problem that they have, a real problem. I'm not going to share that with the group. A is going to tell a problem to B. B is going to be listening very carefully to the active listening. And after 3 minutes, I'll time you, and after 3 minutes, B is going to say to A, "This is what I heard you say," and repeat it. No commentary. No, "Oh yeah, I had that problem too. No, you know, I know how to fix it." Nothing. Just repeat what you heard the other person say. Okay? A can then help if B forgot details of it. A can then say a few words. And that's it. That's all I want you to do. So pick a partner. Who's going to be A and who's going to be B? Pick a partner. If you don't have a partner, we can manage to find one. Everybody have a partner? Who does not have a partner? Who does not have a partner? Wait a second, I'm timing you. Do you have a partner? Yeah, okay. You have a partner? Everybody, you don't have a partner? You can be like, "Sir, do you have a partner?" Right here. Okay, I'm going to time you. Just a minute. Let's start again. A, figure out who A is, figure out who B is. Ready?
3 minutes of time. You can talk the lesson three if you finish, but don't talk. Ladies and gentlemen, after you tell the problem, and make it 2, don't make it 4.
No, we're 2 and 2.
So 2 and 2?
I'm married to him, not her.
Okay. No, I didn't know the team part. Just a minute, I just want to say something. When you finish the problem that you have with your partner, don't talk. Wait until I say stop. Keep looking at each other. I don't care what you do. And by the way, D is not allowed to talk. No talking. No talking, D. Just whisper. Okay. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go.
B is not supposed to be talking. B is supposed to just listen.
And he laughed when we went to that.
Okay, start finishing up. Now, B, tell A what A said. No Rashi, no Tosfot. It's just what the person said. No commentary. Just what the person said. I heard you say, go. When you finish, face forward so I know that you're finished. Face forward when you finish so I know you're finished. Okay. face forward when you finish. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I want to know from the A's how it felt talking. What did it feel like from the A's? Who are the A's? Okay, what was it like to talk without being interrupted? A's, share.
It was a little, well, I thought the time frame was a little long for me for what the issue was, but it was a little awkward with somebody you don't really know to just talk that way.
Okay, anybody else?
I wanted some feedback.
I'm sorry?
I wanted any feedback.
You wanted feedback?
Yeah.
Anybody else? What did it feel like to talk to somebody and not having anybody respond? What was it like? I'm sorry? Like sending an email? Okay, what else?
It was really being listened to. It definitely felt like she was hearing what I was saying.
It felt like she was hearing what you were saying? Uh-huh.
It's like a relief for you.
It's what?
Relief.
A relief? In what sense?
Just let out, you know, and you don't have to hold on and just can be heard.
Can be heard. Anybody else? No? Nobody felt anything? Okay. Usually people say that they felt heard, exactly, that you weren't interrupted, and usually you don't hear other things, but okay, maybe not this group. What about the people who were listening? How did it feel?
It was terrible.
Why was it terrible?
It was terrible.
Why?
Just because you can't, like, you know, he was done talking after, like, 20 seconds. 2.5 minutes of just staring in the eyes.
And you didn't say anything else after you stopped talking? He didn't say anything else when you just sat there?
I wanted to commit myself. You didn't say anything after the 20.
You did not say anything after the 20 seconds?
No, we weren't allowed to talk.
No.
He wasn't allowed to talk.
He was not allowed to, but you were.
And I want to say, listen, I understand it's very hard for you.
So you wanted to. So wait a second. So now 3 minutes felt very long,
yes,
right?
It felt very long.
It did, didn't it? Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? 3 minutes felt very long. Think about how often you listen to your children for 3 minutes without being interrupted.
Like, who's interrupting?
No.
But they're talking in...
Yes, for 3 whole minutes.
They don't talk. They don't talk.
Really? Think about how many times you interrupt. Not because you mean to interrupt. Not because you mean to. Because you're doing a whole bunch of other things. Because life takes on. But if you think about 3 minutes, just 3 minutes of listening... By the way, how did it feel when B reflected back to A? Anybody have any feelings about that?
Short.
It was short?
Like, I was speaking for a really long time, and she told me what I said, and it was concise.
What did you say?
It was concise.
It was concise?
I got the problem in a couple of words.
You got the problem in a couple of words? You wanted to say something?
As the person who was telling it back over, I felt like, great, I can talk now. But I wasn't able to give him a commentary, so that part was still frustrating.
Was it frustrating for you?
We have some kids of similar ages, no doubt, some similar challenges.
Well, was it frustrating?
Laurel's insights.
You wanted her insights.
Of course.
Right.
I wanted to give it to
her. Did you feel uncomfortable when she told you what you said?
I already knew it.
But didn't it make you feel better that she understood it? In some way?
I get enough reflecting.
Fine. Well, okay. So the question I have for you again and again and again is, when do you listen to your children? 3 minutes was a long time for a lot of you. I want you to feel how long 3 minutes is. It's nothing in a time span when you think about paying attention to somebody. But we rarely pay attention that way.
Usually the interruptions aren't even from myself, it's from the others.
That's the point. Okay, so you're really not listening. You're really not actively listening to children. I'm not saying you. We all. It's the way, again, what I'm trying to raise here is, what does it mean when we want to bring up healthy socially, emotionally children?
it means that we need to listen. What are they saying? What are the children saying? We don't even know what they're saying half the time. Yeah.
Well, I feel like at an age like 3 or 4, I feel like they say so little that in order to get more out of them, you need to ask, like, draw more questions out of them. Like, they don't have, like, 3 minutes of conversation. It's usually like, what'd you do at school today? I played with so-and-so. Oh, yeah? What'd you play? Like, you have to consistently ask them more questions in order to get more information out of them.
And I'm not talking about that, though. I'm not talking about... I'm not talking... Who said something about a child that said something? Well, how did I get to this? Did you ask a question? What did you say?
I said, what happens if in the morning everything went as planned and they're dressed and everything's ready to go and they say, I don't want to go in the car?
Yeah, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? You have to sit there and just stop. You can't say, you got to go to school because I got to go to work. When a child says that, they're saying something real. And we need to listen. Yeah.
Isn't that always the question that psychologists ask, like, is it Freudian or is it just, he doesn't necessarily want to spend more time and honest. And instead of green, he wants yellow. Instead of going with them, I want to go to
school.
Okay.
I don't know.
What do you mean? I'm not sure.
Like, you're saying he's telling you something. Yeah. He's screaming out, I don't like that mom because she... Chris is in the car. Like,
right.
That's what you're saying, right?
No, that's not what I'm saying. All I said was listen. That's all I said. I don't know what the kid is saying.
Like, not that it was a bad experience, but like you're saying, he's telling you something by saying he doesn't go in the car. He's saying, like, there's something about the car I don't like. I don't whatever.
We don't know what he's saying.
No, I know, but you're saying listen to him because he might have an inner problem, whatever. So, but we're like, oh, he's just being difficult because he went on the blue one.
So let's talk about being difficult. Again, and I say this wholeheartedly, I've been in this business for many years, and tell you that children don't do things to be difficult. They do it because...
Annoy us, but like sometimes they don't know why they want the blue one or the yellow one. They just want it because they don't want the other one.
You know, listen, I'm going to tell you again. I know you don't want to hear this. But if we want to focus on the social or emotional piece of this childhood, early childhood piece, there are reasons.
So
they might not be able to articulate those reasons, but the feelings internally are real. And that's the piece that we need to address.
So when he says he doesn't want to get in the van, he wants you to take him. Asking them why?
No.
What do you say then?
No.
What do you drive together?
No. No. The same way you wouldn't say to a child what you do in school today, because many children will tell you nothing.
Right.
But if he says he doesn't want to go in the van with them, he wants you to take them, there's an issue he has.
There's clearly at that moment an issue the child has.
Okay, so how do you get that out of him?
What?
Is driving inappropriate at that point? Selling the bad cookies on the...
Oh boy, we're really into reward and punishment here. Let's talk a little bit in the more larger issue here about children and when they say things and what that means. When a child says they don't want to go on a bus this morning, I am telling you that this child is asking for help. Otherwise, why would the child in his wildest dreams say that? He's not there to annoy you. Something is not comfortable for that child.
So what should you do at that point?
Okay. Listen. There's no magic answer to bringing up children. But there is a magic answer to listening. If you're conscious and if you're aware, you will say to yourself, okay, something is bothering this child. We've got to figure out what it is. Now, it may be that he has said it 6 times before this morning, but you didn't hear it because you're running around the house trying to get 3 other kids out of the house. And you are. I understand that. So it didn't just happen today that he's saying it. Something else is going on in this child's life, and that child isn't comfortable. Now, I don't know, first thing I would check is the kid sick? If he's never said this before, let's see if the child's not feeling well. Maybe he has a fever, or she, I don't know. But you can't dismiss and say, you've got to go, close the door.
Why can't you ask why, though?
You can.
Can I get an answer from my older one, my 7-year-old, but not so much from my 4-year-old?
You can. You can ask. Sometimes they don't know. Sometimes they don't know. But that, you know, that doesn't mean you say, okay, you got to go. That's it. You don't know. That's it. You're out of here.
So you meant to let the car go down the bus?
I don't know what I would do. I told you there are no magic answers. But I know one thing, that if a child says, I don't want to go on that bus today, something's not right. So you got to be like an investigator. Let's figure out. If they don't respond to you, you have to say, okay, let me see.
Well, you know what? It's going to take a while, so you might as well be ready to take him to school and figure
well,
it out.
Well, you know, I don't know. Everybody has their own cheshbon of time
right
and things
there,
like that.
You don't want to get on it. You can't have
it. That's also not the right answer because then the child thinks, like, oh, if I say
it, I don't
know.
It depends. I think that
okay, so now let's go back to that giving. Let's talk back to the giving. The more you give in terms of trust, the more you'll get back in terms of independence.
One trip up to school, and I had to sit with my daughter for 3-4 days and at the bus at a different bus stop because she didn't want to go to the other bus stop because she didn't like, and it took that long before she finally told me that the girl told her she didn't want her at that bus stop. Why can't you go to another bus stop?
As
finally
said,
it came out and, you know,
okay, as we said, childhood is complex. There's nothing simple here. We think it's simple. You go to school, you come home, your mother and father take care of you, and it's all wonderful. It isn't. You know, there are things in school that are not wonderful. Sometimes you get into a fight. Sometimes you don't like the way a teacher said something to you. Sometimes the teacher's not so sensitive. Sometimes the child's not so sensitive. Hard work for children to go to school. So we don't know. We don't know. I'm just saying, listen. I'm just saying, listen actively. Don't dismiss. These are human beings, Tzelem Elokim, with social and emotional issues at a very, very young age. And they're not playing tricks. They're not playing tricks. If they're playing tricks, it's survival. It's about something that's not okay in here. And we got to figure out what that stuff that's not okay and help them. You wanted to say something? You had your hand up?
I'm saying at times they'll suggest an alternate plan, like, I want you to take me. But at times it's just them exerting their independence. I don't want to go. There's no real reason other than their overall.
I don't believe that.
I assume this at a younger age.
I don't believe that. I don't believe it.
Why not?
Because I believe.
And they just saying, you know, I don't want to go.
I believe.
Because you're telling me to go.
Because, well, then there are other issues going on in this child's life. There are other issues. It's not just about I'm going to play with my father and teach.
Well, no, I don't mean play. I mean just.
That would be
at that point, I don't want to go.
Can you see that more?
No, but that's
older,
really like, I want to stay home because I want to be with you because you're staying home and I want to be with you, so
right.
I'm staying home. But that's not. That's a social emotional.
Well,
issue,
again, it depends. If you're one, if you're two, if you're three, if you're five. You know, again, we need to see ages and stages. But what I'm trying to say is that developmentally, children need to be supported in their anxieties, and children have anxieties. They're not playing games. And the more we give in terms of their support, the more they will feel competent. And children need to feel competent. Nobody likes to feel incompetent. So again, I'm suggesting that we listen carefully to what's going on. We need to hear what is happening. And hearing means active. Active listening. What you were doing, that was active listening. You weren't, when you're concentrating on somebody else and you're gonna repeat back to what that person said, you're not thinking about 13 other things. You are so focused because you've got to tell them later what he said or she said. So you're not thinking about 3 other things that you're supposed to be doing tonight.
So the van issue, that you want to get in that carpool, and you're saying that we shouldn't really ask why. You're saying if we had been listening earlier, when that problem actually reared up, we would have figured it out by the other things we're saying. So it's not just listening at that moment.
No.
It's
to support the social emotional development of children. We need to hear what they're saying all the time.
All the time.
That's our job. That's our job. We need to hear what they're saying. We need to begin to understand and support them. Acknowledge their fears. Acknowledge what they're going through. I know you really don't want to go on the bus today. I really know you don't want to go on the bus today. I know it's going to be hard for you. But figure out what that hard stuff is. Maybe we could figure out what's hard for you when you come home today and we'll figure it out. You need to be the child's advocate. That's the way the child's going to grow socially and emotionally. That's the way the child's going to grow, the support. Yeah.
We get a lot of traction from putting on plays. So we'll take a doll and say, this is Mommy, our daughter, and this is the boy who we have a fight with. And can you explain to us what happened in school?
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not. That's a different realm. It's not my field, really. I'm really concerned right now about attitudes towards children, more than what we do with them, more from our perspective. But you wanted to say something.
I don't remember. It's okay.
I also want to go to the fours and fives for a few minutes, and then we can have a little bit more of a discussion.
Yes. So fours and fives, they acquire, children in fours and fives acquire more sense of purpose. The child is energetic. They're ready to learn differently than twos and threes. More willing to listen and learn from teachers, parents, and other children. You know, they're more sociable in that sense. They're also actively focused, and they're less defiant. I'm talking generalities, by the way. They're always one, you know, there are always issues. But in general, you know, twos will fight you. Threes will also, you know, no, do myself, self, 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 whatever self is. You know, that fours and fives are more eager to kind of please. So we need to encourage children to use their energies in an active and involved way, to have confidence in to grow. Because, you know, if we ask children to sit for a very long time, they'll act out. And it doesn't make anybody feel good also. You know, when children act out, they don't feel good. You might think, oh, they're acting out, they want to be big shots. Think about in here, how they feel in here. Terrible. Terrible. They feel terrible about themselves. And then they act out because they don't know how to deal with it. So children who act out are feeling bad inside. They're not feeling good. We need to find a place to make them feel good.
Sorry. What do you mean by acting out? Like being wild or like screaming and crying? What does acting out mean?
At four and five?
At four and five. Acting out means that they're not acting in a way that's acceptable for the group or for the family or wherever they are.
A particular thing might be striking the brother, tormenting the brother?
Yeah, that could be acting out. Acting out. But, you know, then there's sibling rivalry, you know. It's not a bad thing. But
it's not?
No, it's not a bad thing. It's common, it's fine. It depends. It doesn't they kill each other, that's a whole different story.
Torture.
Yeah, torture, exactly, exactly. Most times it's just fun, but...
Yeah, it is.
And it's building a relationship.
And that's also
there are wonderful books written about... I think one book is Sibling Rivalry. Is that the name of the book? I think so. It's a wonderful book, yeah.
So when you've got me intrigued on this. The four-year-old likes to torment the two-year-old just to get a reaction out of him. This is not acting out. This is sibling rivalry.
Depends how badly, you know.
Well, nothing too bad.
Break his
like,
neck. Is
that hard? Boy holding it too high for him to get it and make it a
teasing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it for negative attention or positive attention?
No, not really.
But I'm not even
they do it sometimes.
I hear it, and I
they do it sometimes, not just for negative or positive attention. They do it to relate, and they know that they get a reaction of some sort.
To
yeah.
Show his brother,
but let's go back. Let's go back for a few minutes. Okay. The other thing that children need to we can't subject them to expectations that are beyond their abilities. And you have to be sure you know what you're doing. You know, when you tell some children at two that they have to dress themselves, I don't know. There's some fours who still need to be dressed. I'm sorry?
Abilities most often, like, based on their expectations, meaning there's in certain circumstances, certain families, certain things are expected, and therefore the children figure out a way to do them.
Well,
and
you know,
our families, that's yeah. just not those.
Yeah, I worry about that also, and I'll tell you why. Because in some cultures, 10-year-olds are taking care of babies. Now, does that mean that's a good thing for 10-year-olds? I don't know. I worry about that. So, while I'm exaggerating, but there are cultures who do that. While I'm exaggerating on that piece, to say that you have to rise to the expectation of the family within the context of what's appropriate for that age group.
Maybe that is appropriate for that 12-year-old to be
taken care of. I'm not talking about 12s. We're talking about early childhood here. I didn't talk about
10s. Inside of that.
I didn't talk about 12s. That's not my particular field. I really want to focus on the little ones. If we put too much pressure on young children, if we're talking about social emotional, they will feel frustrated. Frustration leads to very bad self feelings about self. People need to feel successful in order to feel good about themselves. We know that about ourselves. That doesn't mean children shouldn't struggle, but the struggle needs to be for success. Yeah.
That's for my question. So, along those lines, when you have a child who things that are age appropriate for whatever reason are very hard for them, and you're trying to work on them, so they need to push. To their beyond their comfort zone.
Okay, you know
how do you?
I'm not from the beyond the comfort zone person. I feel that you learn, and I support research on that, Vygotsky, Lev Vygotsky. When he talked about where we take children, he talked about this is where they are without our help. And with our help, they're going to move here. Not here. Here. And with our help means that I am going to support you so you can get to this place. Not this, because this is going to be much, much later. We're going to do it one step at a time, teeny, teeny steps. And expectations have to be just that. You have to be sure that that child's going to be successful when they get to that next stage, not struggling to the point where they just can't do it. Think of yourselves. When you learn something new, what it feels like. If you know you can't do it, or if you know you could do that one step, what's the difference? How you feel about yourself? That's all we're talking about. It's that social, emotional piece. And by the way, there is a huge amount of evidence that if you don't have that social, emotional piece in place, you cannot be a good student. So we have a big job here in the first few years of life. Big job. Now, let me also, I also want to talk about the child who does everything wonderful for the parents' sake. Okay. We have to wrap it up. Okay, so wrap it, we have to wrap it up. Okay, so I'd rather wrap it up about, I want to talk about reward and punishment, because I think that that's a critical issue. The first thing I want to say is those children who could do things because adults want them to do it and are very obedient, they later feel that piece, the important piece about their life is what they do, not who they are. So we also need to be very careful what messages we are giving. Now, I want to talk about reward and punishment. Alfie Cohn, you look up his, you've read his book. It's called Punished by Rewards. That's his most important book that I believe in. But if you don't want to read the book, look up Alfie Cohn, Kohn. Look up on his website any article. It's an excellent article about what rewards do for children and what they don't do for children. And in fact, rewards, at the end of the day, do not motivate children at all. Yes, for that moment they may act on it, but in the long run they do not change their practice or behavior. So we need to know that. And the other piece is that his book, what is it called? Punished by Rewards. That's the name of it.
Also Unconditional Parenting.
Oh, yeah, he did that? Oh, yeah, right, he did that. I mean, he wrote a lot of books, but the one that is poignant about rewards, children do not respond to rewards long term. Yes, you have control over them for the moment. But what happens is that the rewards, more and more is expected for rewards, and the motivation lowers. As the rewards get higher, the motivation lowers. If we want our children to be healthy in terms of their social and emotional needs and development, it is absolutely, they need to do things because that's the way it is. Because you do things. You know, get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you eat breakfast, you go to school, that's what you do.